This program. Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned today. We're going to have Dr. Daniel Lieberman on to talk about possibly one of the greatest books ever written, the seminal work, The Story of the Human Body. No one should be without this book, especially if you are in the healthcare industry. It's very, very important. You know, I get to read a lot of books doing this show. And I always learn something from every book I read. But only one other book that I've ever read made me feel a sense of enlightenment the way The Story of the Human Body has made me feel by Dr. Daniel Lieberman. How you doing, Dr. Lieberman?
I'm pleased to be here.
I got to tell you something. Everybody needs to read this book. I don't care who they are. If everybody in the country read this book, we would probably have a greater impact on the current health crisis than anything else that anybody could do. And more importantly, every physician should have to read this book when they go to school to become physicians. Everybody who makes healthcare policy decisions should have to read this book. This book is unbelievable.
Well, gosh, thank you so much.
Well, I mean, okay, so explain why you even got started writing this book. This is a major undertaking, and I also have to tell you, it reads like a fictional novel. You don't want to put it down. It's not boring. It's an amazing book, but the information in it. Explain how you got started even undertaking this.
Well, I mean, it had a long gestation, but I teach human evolution here at Harvard, and for years I've been teaching, you know, what happened in human evolution. And I can, you know, a lot of my students are going to be doctors, you know, they're pre-medical students. And I've spent a lot of my career writing, doing research for other academics. And over the years, I got increasingly frustrated that what I was teaching and what I was writing, although it was fun and interesting, you know, figuring out why we are the way we are is fun, that most people who I talk to or teach aren't actually all that interested in knowing, you know, what the brain size of Lucy, you know, Australopithecus afarensis was. But they do care about their bodies. And I started thinking more and more about how is evolution relevant to health. And in most people's eyes, that, you know, they think paleo diet. That's all they think.
Right.
And the paleo diet has some good things, but also some problematic things. And I realized that we have a very superficial sort of understanding of how our evolutionary history is relevant to how and why we get sick, and also how and why it is that we're constantly treating the symptoms of diseases rather than preventing their causes. So it was my attempt to try to see how I can, you know, help people understand these questions and help move the debate forward so that we can help each other.
And you have accomplished that. So a couple things that I thought about. First of all, one evening when I was reading the book, and I was probably through the first, I don't know, six or seven chapters. I remember closing the book. I was laying in bed. I remember closing the book and holding it horizontally in between my hands and looking at my hands and realizing that my hands looked like the hands of an ape. And I've never felt this way before, but when I was reading the book and I was reading about, you know, our last common ancestor and how this journey began and what we were like when we first learned how to stand up. And I mean, it was very evident to me that we take for granted that very little has changed with our bodies over some millions of years now. And I that was the first thing. The second thing that I thought about was, I know why people probably don't want to read this book. You know why? It makes you feel very insignificant when you realize 6 million years have passed and you're like this blip on a blip. I mean, it's very sobering.
It is, but I think it's also exciting. And I think it's fun to understand why we are the way we are and why our hands are the way they are, and I think it's empowering, actually. We're an experiment. We're an evolutionary experiment. But I think that it's fun and useful.
Yes. When you get past those two points, the book is startlingly enlightening. So let's start with a couple things that I found most interesting. First of all, the fact that the greatest contribution to our evolution early on was not that our brain was not our brains, but the fact that we became bipeds and mm-hmm. that we perspired.
Yeah, yeah. We often think that the brain led the way in human evolution. What makes us most special is our big brains. But actually, Darwin figured this out too. That actually was bipedalism that started us off into being very different from other animals, we didn't actually start evolving big brains until 4 or 5 million years after we diverged from the other apes. But importantly, becoming bipeds had all kinds of contingent effects. So evolution works through contingency. Things can't happen unless other things have happened previously. And becoming bipedal had some advantages early on, but it also had some important disadvantages, which then set the stage for our becoming really good at endurance running. Because as soon as we became bipeds, we became slow. If you go running with your dog has twice as many limbs to produce power to move itself forward. And humans can run basically about half as fast as other animals of our body size because we only have two legs rather than four legs. And that meant we couldn't hunt. Or run very fast, and when predators chased us, we were probably really easy picking. And that was a cost, which was apparently outweighed by the other benefits of being a bipedal. But then starting around 2 million years ago, as the climate started changing in Africa again very profoundly, evolution somehow found a way to make that cost an advantage, which is to turn us into not sprinters, but endurance runners. And one of the key sets of features that make us so good at endurance running is our ability to sweat, which is something that is unique to humans.
And you know what I also found very, very interesting was that our first foray into hunting without weapons was persistence hunting, because we were able to sweat and we were able to go for long distance when other animals couldn't. So we would just wear them out until they would die of heat shock and we'd pick them up and eat them.
That's exactly right. Isn't that cool? Because, even putting a stone point on the end of a spear, that was invented maybe only 300 to 500,000 years ago. But we know that our ancestors were hunting big game like kudu and wildebeest and things like that between 2 and 2.5 million years ago. And so how did they hunt without any of the technology that we take for granted, even among very sort of simple sort of Stone Age technology? And the answer is, as you say, persistence hunting. We're able to run animals, chase them at a speed that makes them gallop. And because they can't cool by sweating the way we do, when they gallop, they have to cool by panting, and you can't gallop and pant at the same time. So if you can make an animal gallop for a long period of time, you actually cause it to overheat, and that's exactly what our ancestors did. And there's still people who occasionally do this in different parts of the world. It's very rare, of course, because we don't need to anymore. But that legacy is part of our bodies, and so the fundamental sort of basic aspect of human anatomy and biology and physiology is that we're endurance athletes. We evolved to run and walk long distances, and that's part of who we are. It makes us very special compared to most organisms.
And that's why sitting at desks all day is having the deleterious effect on health that it's having today, and we know this about the lack of activity. Another thing that I was amazed by was that the Ice Age, two things. Number one, the Ice Age didn't happen and disappear. It ebbed and flowed over 40,000 years, right? It came and went.
Yeah, yeah. It was constant change, and must have been really quite challenging for everybody back then.
But in fact, climate change is what allowed us to basically cover the entire planet at some point in time, because every time the climate became unlivable, let's say, we went and moved someplace else, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're not sort of nailed to the ground and just coped with the climate change. As the climate has changed, as glaciers, for example, covered the northern hemisphere and then receded, as the Sahara expanded and shrank, that pumped humans and also other animals and plants sort of around the globe, and so we got pumped in and out of Africa and throughout Europe and Asia as climates shifted. But we also managed to develop technologies that that enable us to sort of cope with climate change in a way that was different from any other species. So by the time that, you know, around 40, 50,000 years ago, humans had become culturally sophisticated enough that they were actually able to sort of endure and ride out the ice age in some parts of the world. And that was unique. And it may be one of the reasons we outlasted the Neanderthals.
And the last thing I want to talk about with the ice age was we think of ourselves as being big brain now, but there's really evidence that our brain has shrunk since that period, right?
That's right. Yeah. So during the ice age, our ancestors had brains that were slightly larger than ours today. I mean, not hugely, you know, a few hundred milliliters, but our brains have shrunk because actually our bodies have shrunk. So you know, animals that live in cold environments, think about them, like mammoths and, you know, bears, they tend to be really large. And the reason for that is that you want to have a large area, a sort of small surface area relative to the size of your body, right? So big animals actually have smaller surface area to body mass ratios. So as the ice age receded and it's gotten warmer since then, we've actually gotten smaller. So selection for humans gets a little bit smaller, and because we've gotten smaller, our brains have also gotten smaller by just the right proportion. So yeah, we're smaller brains than we used to be a few thousand years ago.
And if anything, the job one, or the evolutionary gift of our brain, was not necessarily our ability to logic things out, but instead community, the ability to want to cooperate with others in the party. And you point out in the book, you know, a chimp may feed a baby chimp that's lost its mother, but it's not going to share food with another peer. But humans do that, right?
That's right. That's one of the things that makes us special. We're amazingly cooperative, pro-social creatures that help each other out in ways that no other animal does. And it's intrinsically part of who we are. I think, for example, it's part of even running. You know, everybody was amazed about the Boston Marathon this year and how everybody was running as this big community event, which it was. It was an amazing event. But, you know, people have been doing that for 2 million years. I mean, we've been running in order to hunt, and when people hunt, they share their food. So hunters, when they came back from a hunt 2 million years ago, would come back and share that food with everybody. This has been going on for millions and millions of years. Nobody else does that. No other animals do it in the same way.
Well, and it's why we have government. I mean, because we are so unique that way, that government says, hey, this is the law, do it, and we follow the law because we want to cooperate.
Yeah, government is a, you know, formal governments are a very recent phenomenon, since really the invention of agriculture, but the instinct, the tendency for us to help each other out and act in cooperatively, is very ancient. And, it's essential. It's quintessential to being a human being.
We have to take a break. I've got so many questions, and we're going to end up talking about the current healthcare, debacle as we go through this. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Lieberman. The book is called The Story of the Human Body. You must read this book, and I really mean this. If you read this book, you'll have such a different opinion about everything around you. You can get the book by going to superhumanradio.com at the very bottom of the homepage. You can click a link to order the book. Everybody has to read this book. I promise you, it will change the way you look at the world. It will change the way you look at your life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They say that tough love is sometimes the best advice. He's got the toughest love.
Why you should not drink diet sodas? It's very, very simple. If you don't subscribe to the idea that they're toxic, fine. Then subscribe to the idea that they cause a derangement in insulin response. If you don't subscribe to that, fine. Then subscribe to the idea that they spike insulin. I mean, it's like, do whatever you want, but why do we need science to tell us to stop consuming more chemicals? Are you really that pathetically addicted to something that's not good for you? Then say it. Say, I'm addicted to these things and I can't help myself. I know they're bad for me. I'm going to keep using them, and then we don't have to do research.
You're listening to Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenoir.
By now, you're aware of the cognitive benefits of nootropics.
My friends over at Pure Nootropics are giving my listeners 10 to 30% off their already great prices on over 70 high-quality nootropics. Stock up on DHM so you can feel good after your holiday celebration, or try the Superhuman Stack to boost your brain and energize your day. Go to shrnetwork.biz/pure, that's P-U-R-E, and start saving today. TaylorMade Health is focused on making sure you're able to perform and look your best. They are a leader in game-changing supplements and cosmetic products. Whether you want to increase strength, expedite recovery, facilitate soft tissue repair, or reduce deep wrinkles, TaylorMade Health has you covered. TaylorMade Health is also the home to Dr. Seed's products such as BPC, BPC Plus, and the Chill Pill. All of my listeners can now get 20% off their first order with code TRY20. That's T-R-Y-2-0. This code can even be used on subscription orders. Visit shrnetwork.biz/try20 today and use code TRY20 for 20% off your first order. Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Are you ready to change the way you age? Of course you are. That's why you're here. Juvicell is a new, first-of-its-kind dietary supplement that includes 10 key research-backed ingredients shown in studies to support lifespan. Things like resveratrol, fisetin, quercetin, pterostilbene, sulforaphane, turmeric, all in a single dose. You may have some of these ingredients already, but Juvicell is the first to combine them all into a single product to support your lifespan. It's vegan, non-GMO, and sustainable. Live better, longer with Juvicell. Go to shrnetwork.biz/livebetter. Use code SHR and save 20% off today.
When craving a snack, reach for Select Savory Snack Sugar-Free Biltong, the healthy alternative to sugar-laden beef jerky. They use a fattier cut of beef, making it more tender and flavorful. For mealtime, choose from their 63 seasonings, which are sugar and additive-free. From chipotle rub to savory pumpkin spice, you'll find an option to suit your palate. Go to shrnetwork.biz/SSS today. Use code SHR15 to save 15% on any meat snack or seasoning. Savor the flavor today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio, the story of the human body. Probably one of the greatest books ever written, I'm telling you. Dr. Daniel Lieberman. So, Dr. Lieberman, I erroneously used the word on my show starting somewhere early last year, devolution. I said, you know, we are actually doing things today that are hindering, impairing, or changing the direction of evolution. But you call it disevolution in the book. Talk about it a little
bit. Yeah. Well, evolution is just change over time. And dis is bad, you know, something gone awry. You know, there's two kinds of evolution going on today. One is the old-fashioned natural selection, the kind of stuff that Darwin wrote about, and it's still actually happening. It's just very slow and very hard to measure, and the changes that will occur in our lifetime are almost impossible to measure unless you're a scientist with huge sample sizes and fancy equipment. So we don't need to worry about evolution by natural selection. But the other kind of evolution that's going on is cultural, right? We're changing the foods that we eat and the ways we use our bodies in terms of how we walk and sit and run and, you know, everything. Our bodies are interacting with those environments, those new environments, in ways that are causing us to get sick. And we call those mismatch diseases, diseases caused by our bodies being poorly adapted to the environments in which we now live. And then, culturally, we respond to getting sick by treating the symptoms of getting sick. So, you know, you wear shoes that make your feet weak and then your arches collapse and then you go get an orthotic and that enables you to keep you know, keep using shoes. And we do the same thing with diabetes and cancer and heart disease. We're getting sick because of the way we use our bodies is out of whack with how our bodies evolve. But we're also treating the symptoms more and more effectively. And that's enabling us to keep this vicious circle going. And I call that vicious circle dis-evolution.
And I called it devolution, but it was not the appropriate word. But I couldn't come up with dis-evolution with my small brain. Well, obviously smaller than it would have been had I been born in the Ice Age. But one of the things that I find interesting about this discussion is that you point out that the litmus test for tolerable diseases is A, if it impairs our ability to reproduce, and B, if we can make money off of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so a lot of the diseases that people get sick from, you know, they don't affect people really seriously until they've already had grandparents, you know. So let's take heart disease, the number one killer of Americans today, right? Most people don't suffer the ill effects of hypertension or you know, atherosclerosis or whatever until they're in their 50s or 60s. And at that point, you know, it's not going to really, you know, going to have any effect on their reproductive success, which is what natural selection really cares about. And then, of course, the other thing is that, you know, the reason we get sick is not because people are out there trying to get us sick, it's that they're trying to give us stuff, and we're quite happy to buy and do things that don't promote health, right? We like comfort. We like sweet things. We like, you know, if you put an escalator in the Kalahari Desert, I guarantee you the hunter-gatherers there would be using the escalator. And,
right.
And if you put donuts in front of any human being, any part of the planet, I guarantee you they'd eat that over the, you know, the apples or carrots. That's how we're evolved, to crave those kinds of foods. And right now we live in a society and a world and an economy where we can suddenly, for the first time, have infinite access to foods and luxuries that used to be rare.
Now, I've said on this show that there's a new type of selection pressure. It's where you get your information from. And thank you. And one of the things I think we're seeing now is actually a tipping point has occurred. We have children who probably will not have offspring because of autism, because of colon cancer at 9 and 10 years old, diabetes at 9 and 10 years old, and other disorders that may, in fact, impair their ability to have offspring. So we actually have, where we no longer have infectious disease, we have diseases of modernity that may actually thin the herd. 400 or 500 years from now, we could see entire gene lines erased from this gene pool. Do you think that's true?
Well, only to the extent that the factors that, so selection's only going to operate if there's a heritable basis to people's proclivity to get those diseases. So if you have all of us have some proclivity to get diabetes and heart disease, etc. But the question is, are some of us more likely to get those diseases because of a gene we inherited, or because we simply happen to have the bad luck or the good luck to be born to in environments where those factors are present? And I would argue that there's really, you know, all of us crave donuts. All of us crave driving in cars and taking elevators instead of the stairs. It's really our parents and the environments in which we grow up that's really making the big difference. So people who listen to your show or who go to, you know, who come from, turns out, you know, people who are more educated tend to be more, wealthy. They have the time and leisure and the ability to exercise more and to buy healthier foods. It's not cheap to buy healthy foods today.
Right.
So I think that it's unlikely that selection is going to really act, because those factors that make, say, you or me more likely to live a healthy lifestyle as opposed to somebody who doesn't listen to the show, they're probably not, have no genetic basis. So
right.
It's not going to cause selection.
A very wise therapist, when I was in my 20s, I had my first experience with talk therapy. A very, very wise therapist named Jerry Katz once said to me, that men pursue and women choose. Can we blame women for the problems with selection today? Come on,
nah,
Doc, come on.
First of all, well, all my instincts are not to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. No, I think choices by both males and females. I mean, sexual selection certainly is an important evolutionary thing. But really, it's all of us are subject to these. Look, I run a lot, right? But I figured out that if I'm going to run a lot, I have to coerce myself into running.
Right.
You know, I can't. I have a a running group, so that there are days when the weather out there is foul, and it's, particularly this winter was a really tough winter to go running. But if it weren't for the fact that I had a bunch of folks that I was supposed to run with, and a marathon I'd signed up for, I wouldn't have been out there. And so, so I think those of us who figure out how to, when I go to the supermarket, I've learned long ago to eat before I go. Otherwise, I make worse choices when I go to the supermarket. So, it's we have to figure out how to better adapt to this environment that we've created. But we also all need help in terms of understanding that environment and helping us from being nudged too much in the wrong direction. So I think all of us are making choices, and it's very hard to make the right choices. It's a challenge.
Yeah.
All of us struggle with it. Day in, day out. I don't know anybody who naturally does the right thing, because it's hard.
No, it is. You have to be focused on it. You have to make very, very wise decisions. And even those of us who make the decisions, you're right. It's our genetic predisposition to want to eat foods that are sweet, salty, and fatty, to sit around
instinct. They're instinct. They're part of what we call the fast brain. And you really, we need to use our slow brain, what Daniel Kahneman calls the slow brain, and it's powerful. But we need ways in which to turn off that fast brain and turn on that slow brain. And that's a real challenge.
Well, deferred gratification is not something that is a genetic gift of ours. I mean, deferred gratification requires us to plan ahead, and our brain was designed to, I'm hungry now. I need shelter now. I'm tired now.
Well, we have both parts of that brain. So we have those instincts, but we also have the ability to reason.
Yes.
They're both there, and the problem is that they're designed to do different things. They evolved to do different things. So those instincts help get us out of trouble. Those instincts help us put on, eat things that we probably ought to eat, because later on we'll get the benefit of it. So not eating, in the Paleolithic, if there was a plate of donuts in front of you and you weren't really hungry, that would have actually been maladaptive.
Right.
To not eat those donuts. Today it's become adaptive. So
right.
The circumstances have shifted. But those instincts are ancient, and so we need to understand those instincts and how to control them and to use them to our benefit, and how to avoid them being used to somebody else's benefit, for us to survive and thrive.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the influence that the arch in our foot and how our hips changed, and more importantly, some research that I found. There was a debate going on the show last week because of the whole backlash on Five Fingers, which I'm a big fan of. And I want to talk about the arch and the mitten shoe and some of those things. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Lieberman. The book is The Story of the Human Body. If you have not bought any of the books that I've suggested this year, and you only want to buy one book this year, this has to be the book, I'm telling you. And in fact, I've given this book as gifts to Adele Musa, who contributes to the show from Munster, Germany, because the book is that profound. It really is a game changer. It is one of the books that will not only educate you, but enlighten you. You will see everything different. Get it. Go to superhumanradio.com. It's right on the homepage. We'll be right back.
There's something comforting about knowing he's out there.
Government is in place because it assumes that people are too stupid to care for themselves.
By your side.
Government has to take up the parental role of teaching people what to do.
Fighting the good fight.
Government has to get out of people's pantries, first of all. They can't legislate health.
He's Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio.
TaylorMade Health is focused on making sure you're able to perform and look your best. They are a leader in game-changing supplements and cosmetic products. Whether you want to increase strength, expedite recovery, facilitate soft tissue repair, or reduce deep wrinkles, TaylorMade Health has you covered. TaylorMade Health is also the home to Dr. Seed's products such as BPC, BPC Plus, and the Chill Pill. All of my listeners can now get 20% off their first order with code TRY20. That's TRY20. This code can even be used on subscription orders. Visit shrnetwork.biz/try20 today and use code TRY20 for 20% off your first order.
Are you ready to change the way you age? Of course you are. That's why you're here. Juvecel is a new, first-of-its-kind dietary supplement that includes 10 key research-backed ingredients shown in studies to support lifespan. Things like resveratrol, fisetin, quercetin, pterostilbene, sulforaphane, turmeric, all in a single dose. You may have some of these ingredients already, but Juvecel is the first to combine them all into a single product to support your lifespan. It's vegan, non-GMO, and sustainable. Live better, longer with Juvecel. Go to shrnetwork.biz/livebetter. Use code SHR and save 20% off today.
When craving a snack, reach for Select Savory Snack Sugar-Free Biltong, the healthy alternative to sugar-laden beef jerky. They use a fattier cut of beef, making it more tender and flavorful. For mealtime, choose from their 63 seasonings, which are sugar and additive-free. From chipotle rub to savory pumpkin spice, you'll find an option to suit your palate. Go to shrnetwork.biz/SSS today. Use code SHR15 to save 15% on any meat snack or seasoning. Savor the flavor today.
Getting a massage post-workout is a proven strategy to facilitate better recovery. Getting to massage therapists can be difficult and expensive, especially in these times. The solution is the Meteor, a heated massage ball from Milestorm. Reduce pain and soreness and expedite recovery with the Meteor's research-backed vibration settings and therapeutic heat. It's convenient for travel and works on any body part. Go to shrnetwork.biz/Meteor and use code SHR15 for 15% off and free shipping if you buy two or more. Start recovering better today. Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, said that all disease begins in your gut. That's why it's so important to protect yourself with boosted immune system. If you drink coffee, tea, smoothies, or really any beverage in the morning, and you're looking for a tasty way to start your day and defend yourself against harmful bacteria, then I have just the thing for you to try. It's called the Ultimate Immunity Protection Stack, and it was put together by my friends over at Bioptimizers. Their immunity stack has three products which contain over 18 natural herbs and probiotic blends formulated to fight and eliminate bad bacteria like E. coli, salmonella, gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria, and repair compromised gut lining. It also includes psychobiotics, which help increase serotonin and happy chemicals to naturally elevate your mood, performance, and cognitive function with no side effects or dependencies. It's a great addition to your morning routine, and it tastes amazing. Just stir it into any beverage, sip, and enjoy. It's the ultimate way to boost your immune system right before the holiday season. Go to shrnetwork.biz/protect and use code SHR10 and save an extra 10% off on the... You won't find this deal or stack anywhere else. For fast shipping and the best deal, go to shrnetwork.biz/protect today. By now, you're aware of the cognitive benefits of nootropics. My friends over at Pure Nootropics are giving my listeners 10 to 30% off their already great prices on over 70 high-quality nootropics. Stock up on DHM so you can feel good after your holiday celebration, or try the Superhuman Stack to boost your brain and energize your day. Go to shrnetwork.biz/pure, that's P-U-R-E, and start saving today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. The new year is coming, and we all want to be in better shape. That starts with meal prep. But prepping your own meals is a pain in the neck. That's why I choose HelloFresh to prep my food. HelloFresh offers 23-plus recipes each week, featuring a range of flavors, cuisines, ingredients, so you'll never get bored. Low-carb, carb-smart, vegetarian, pescatarian, options every single week. And no matter what you choose, every single recipe is packed with fresh produce sourced directly from farmers. Best part of all, there's no need to travel to the grocery store anymore. Everything is delivered right to your door. It's not just convenient, but in today's climate, it's safer. If you really want to make 2021 the year you finally reach your peak level of conditioning and physical shape, you must focus on meal prep and meal planning. And the easiest way to do that is to use HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/Superhuman10. That's HelloFresh.com/Superhuman10. Use the code Superhuman10 and get 10 free meals, including shipping. Come on, this is free food. Try it and you'll be hooked just like me. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. 10 free meals, including shipping. It doesn't get any better than that. Go to HelloFresh.com/Superhuman10. Use the code Superhuman10. Tell them Carl sent you. You know, Dr. Lieberman, for a very long time now, I've always had one book next to my bed that was my go-to book when I wasn't reading something for the show. It's the Complete Works of Dashiell Hammett. I can open up that book at any page, start reading, fall right back into place. You know, The Maltese Falcon, The Thin Man, The Glass Key. I've added a second book, and it's yours, and it sits there next to the bed. I mean, I just pick it up. It's dog-eared. It's scribbled on. It's got pages folded. It's got ideas for shows written all over it. It's an amazing book. I really mean that. I think that it's going to go down as possibly one of the greatest contributions to understanding why we are so sick and how we can get ourselves out of it. And I don't understand why it's not an entire portion of a curriculum in medical school today. Let's talk about Five Fingers for a second. Five Fingers just got a backlash because, rightfully so, they made claims in advertising. But I wear Five Fingers and have been for 5, 6, 7 years now, and I love them. The arch, you point out in the book, was one of our evolutionary gifts. It allowed us to be better bipeds, and it even changed the architecture of our hips, right?
It affected our whole bodies, yeah.
So talk about mitten shoes, and you said, you know, people's arches are collapsing nowadays. Shouldn't we be spending more time walking barefoot, or at least with minimalist shoes like those?
There's growing evidence that that's actually, there are benefits to minimal shoes. But, you know, there's a lot of data that haven't been collected. The fact of the matter is that the foot is full of muscles, and those muscles, like anywhere else in your body, have to be used to be strong. And most people have very weak feet because the design of most conventional shoes, actually the reason they're comfortable is that they permit your foot to function without as much muscular effort. So they have arch supports. If you actually take most shoes off, you'll notice they've got what's called a toe spring. So the toes are actually curved upwards, and that means that your toes don't have to work as hard, push as hard when you lift off. We've got all kinds of features in shoes that make them comfortable. But since when is comfort good for you, right? And so what Five Fingers are, or like any other minimal shoe, they're not, you know, there's lots of minimal shoes out there. They just happen to be the one they got picked on. You know, they just don't have all those features, and so they allow your foot more or less to function more the way Mother Nature intended it to function. And we just actually published a paper which showed that we gave a bunch of people minimal shoes and had them run a kind of a running program, and we also gave them others do the exact same running program in conventional shoes, and we put them in MRIs before and after the experiment. And the people who wore minimal shoes, actually, their muscles got stronger. They got thicker. They got larger compared to the people who wore the conventional shoes, and their muscles didn't change at all. So you know, that's evidence, actually, that minimal shoes might actually have some benefits in terms of strengthening your feet. But the flip side of that is that, you know, we have to be careful that if you've been wearing conventional shoes your whole life, your feet aren't actually adapted very well to go minimal, and you have to transition, I think, slowly and carefully and gradually. And I think actually almost all the shoe companies out there advise their.
I had the director of marketing of Vibram on this show in 2009, and we talked about the shoes. And the first thing she said was, if you buy them, you wear them for an hour a day for the first 2 weeks because your feet, there are muscles in your feet that haven't been used in a long, long time, depending on how long you've been wearing mitten-type shoes, that will start to hurt if you just put them on and start wearing them all the time.
Yeah, so I think most people know that, and I think most of these companies have been pretty good about telling people that. But, you know, the way the legal system works is that, sometimes it's... I mean, look, I have nothing to do with the company, and I don't know why they decided to settle or anything like that, but, I been in their shoes, I would have fought the lawyers because I think actually there's pretty good evidence that the shoes are, there's good reason to believe the shoes are actually good for you. But, you know, that's a scientific debate that will play out in the literature for the next 10, 15 years. But I'll tell you this, what's your null hypothesis, right? The null hypothesis in science is the hypothesis you have to reject. Is a conventional shoe better for you unless proved otherwise, or a minimal shoe better for you unless proved otherwise? How come nobody's going after any of the big shoe companies that make conventional shoes? I would argue that if we evolved it, it's probably better for us than something we didn't evolve to do. And conventional shoes are only around for a few decades. So And 30% of Americans have flat feet, not to mention all the other problems we're getting. So don't tell me that conventional shoes are healthy for you unless proven otherwise. That's just nonsense.
Take a glimpse at the future for a moment. Looking at the trajectory that the planet is on right now, and I say the planet because all developed nations are pretty much in the same shape that the United States is. We have a penchant to want pharmacological intervention. We don't want to move. We want to eat lots of calories. So many things that are just so bad for us, and we don't want to give those things up. We want to find ways to continue to live this way. When you look forward using your mind's eye, knowing what you know about how we got to this point, what do you see in the future?
Well, I mean, I think the chances are we're heading towards kind of a future that looks not too unlike the movie WALL-E. I mean, it's...
Yes.
That's really, sadly, where we are headed at the moment. Countries like, they're projecting that by the end of the decade, there could be 100 million people with type 2 diabetes in India. China, also, incredible diabetes epidemic, type 2 diabetes epidemic going on there. So this is a problem that is accelerating around the world. Mexico is now heavier than on average than Americans. So, And the problem with a lot of these countries is they don't have the infrastructure to cope with the kinds of illness that we have. So the question is, are we going to reach some kind of tipping point? In the United States today, we spend approximately 20% of our GDP on healthcare, and yet healthcare only explains about 10% of the variation in healthcare outcomes. We spend less than 5%, way less than 5% on prevention. And the question is, at what point does it have to get so bad that we have to look in the mirror and realize this is a really foolish and stupid way to try to help each other and to stay healthy and to also avoid financial ruin. The fact of the matter is it often takes a crisis for human beings to act, and I'm hoping that the crisis will come sooner rather than later because we're not headed in the right trajectory.
It takes multiple crises. I did this show many years ago. We had a scientist from the UK on who did a study to see how many life-threatening events must occur before a person alters the high-risk behavior that got them there. And for me, my personal journey was I got very, very sick when I was 39 years old. I had a heart problem. I was 330 pounds. And it just took that one event for me to change the trajectory of my life. But the average person takes three. And what she told me during that interview was that most people die around the second. So the reality is that I think we're going to have to be in a crisis for a very long time. When we look at the number of children that are ill today that will be in some need of institutional care, and then we look at the number of people in the older bracket that are even 50, 60, 70 who are going to need institutional care, there's a very, very small segment in the middle of people that have to generate the resources to carry all of this weight. This country cannot. I did a show five years ago with a university professor from the University Ohio State who wrote a book on anthropology, and I said to him, when we talk about civilizations that are gone, we think that they just disappeared. They didn't. They voted with their feet. They left the infrastructure behind because things got so intolerable. I says, what are the benchmarks for a society that's going to fail? And he listed them. And at that time, we were experiencing, this is probably 3 or 4 years, we were experiencing 7 of those. And he said, the last thing to happen is when the military stops protecting the country because they're not getting paid any longer. And the military starts to turn, if you will, and abandon. And we're starting to see that. We're seeing people in the military committing suicide because they can't afford to pay their own bills while they're in the military. And so we are already on that trajectory. When will this government realize that if they don't stop doing what they're doing and do something different, we're really in big trouble?
Yeah, well, it's a very complex systemic problem, part of which is that, if you look, for example, at the Farm Bill and the way in which we subsidize foods, the way the protections that are available to companies versus consumers. I mean, you can buy food and still not know what's in it. It's legal in the country now, completely legal. In fact, it's considered acceptable, and to label foods as fat-free. that are actually more fattening than foods that contain fats.
Right.
This is considered acceptable because we can't infringe on free speech. But free speech for whom? I mean, I think that most people out there, you know, need to know and have a right to know how their food is affecting them. And right now, they're not getting that information. So I think it's a political problem.
Yes, you're being very, very kind. It's a politically corrupt problem because the government, the FDA, the USDA, they are protecting the companies that produce foods. Our government subsidizes three crops that are at the root of a lot of disease in this country, and no one's going to say anything about it because the government needs to get their return on investment. It's a terrible situation. The government does not belong in our pantry. But you're right. But that's why I say information is the new selection pressure. People who get the message and act differently and vote with their dollars, we have a chance. And those who don't.
Yeah, but the problem is that the people who have that information it's become healthy eating and healthy lifestyle has become a class issue in the United States. I had the good fortune of going to Ironman the other year and to see who does Ironman, right?
Right.
These are millionaires for the most part. You know, you have to have a lot of money to put in that amount of time and effort in order to get fit and to eat those kinds of foods and to buy those expensive bicycles. And, you know, runners, for the most part, tend to be, not necessarily, but, you know, they tend to be more educated people. People have time to go to gyms and exercise and buy organic food or whatever it is you think is healthy for you. That takes time and money and effort. And if you're just struggling to get by, you can't afford that. And so we've created a system that's not a class system, not only in terms of income, but also in terms of health. And so it's a complex problem that I don't see a simple solution. As a professor, my job is to help teach people to think and help people get access to information and to be critical. And hopefully, my students and the people who listen to your radio show can start making the changes that are necessary, but it's going to take collective action on a very large scale for this to change.
Yeah, I agree completely. Let's take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the interview. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Lieberman. The book is The Story of the Human Body. Buy it, read it, read it again. Stay tuned.
I bet you're feeling stronger already. So keep listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon.
Quest Nutrition makes bars, cookies, chips, and pizzas out of complete dairy-based proteins. Our products minimize net carbs and sugar without sacrificing taste. Each delicious chocolate-flavored chip, cookie chunk, and crunchy crumble is custom-made to maintain Quest macros. It's time to enjoy foods that work for you, not against you. It's time to enjoy your Quest.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, said that all disease begins in your gut. That's why it's so important to protect yourself with boosted immune system. If you drink coffee, tea, smoothies, or really any beverage in the morning, and you're looking for a tasty way to start your day and defend yourself against harmful bacteria, then I have just the thing for you to try. It's called the Ultimate Immunity Protection Stack, and it was put together by my friends over at Bioptimizers. Their immunity stack has three products which contain over 18 natural herbs and probiotic blends formulated to fight and eliminate bad bacteria like E. coli, salmonella, gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria, and repair compromised gut lining. It also includes psychobiotics, which help increase serotonin and happy chemicals to naturally elevate your mood, performance, and cognitive function with no side effects or dependencies. It's a great addition to your morning routine, and it tastes amazing. Just stir it into any beverage, sip, and enjoy. It's the ultimate way to boost your immune system right before the holiday season. Go to shrnetwork.biz/protect and use code SHR10 and save an extra 10% off on the You won't find this deal or stack anywhere else. For fast shipping and the best deal, go to shrnetwork.biz/protect today. By now, you're aware of the cognitive benefits of nootropics. My friends over at Pure Nootropics are giving my listeners 10 to 30% off their already great prices on over 70 high-quality nootropics. Stock up on DHM so you can feel good after your holiday celebration, or try the Superhuman Stack to boost your brain and energize your day. Go to shrnetwork.biz/pure, that's P-U-R-E, and start saving today.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Lieberman about the story of the human body, a book that he has written on evolution, health, and disease. Your students are really lucky. Do they know how lucky they are to have you as a professor?
Well, they're pretty darn lucky to be here at Harvard as well. I mean, I'm lucky to have them.
It's a great school.
Some of the best students on the planet.
Now, is this it for you? Have you written other books that I just am not aware of? Are you working on another book right now?
I wrote a book a few years ago called The Evolution of the Human Head, but it's a bit more academic.
Uh-huh.
It's basically on how and why our heads function the way they do, and because I actually used to be a head guy before I. That was sort of my training, and then I'm beginning to work on another book.
That's exciting.
But it's in its very, 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 very sort of conceptual stages at this point.
I went to school for optometry early on, and I one of the things that I found really intriguing was when you describe about how our noses are really not very efficient. The way most animals, they breathe straight through, but ours is kind of convoluted and bent all different ways, and it makes it more difficult for us, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it makes us have to work harder, so that it increases resistance in the nose. So it makes the flow more turbulent as opposed to laminar. So the flow air sort of goes through these complex fortitial sort of pattern. But the advantage of that is it makes us more efficient at humidifying air and also capturing humidity on the way out. So our external noses, which are unique to humans, are really an important part of that package of adaptations that make us really good at endurance.
We did a show late last year or early this year, I can't remember when, talking about obstructive sleep apnea in children. Mm-hmm. And the doctor that I had cited that, you know, and this is something that you talk about, you know, how our jaws have changed as a result of softer processed food. They've narrowed, and he indicates that we're going to see a lot more obstructive sleep apnea because the jaw is getting narrower and narrower, and subsequently the airways are getting more easily blocked.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we evolved to eat pretty hard and tough food. And, you know, chimpanzees spend half their day chewing. And hunter-gatherers, you know, who live very sort of, you know, don't have very sophisticated culinary technology, still at least spend 5% of their day chewing. I'll make a bet that nobody listening to this radio show spends that much of their day chewing. And what we chew is very, very soft and not very hard and not very tough. And so that actually affects how our jaws grow, and it means that our faces are actually changing in size and shape simply because they're not exposed to the kinds of loads that we expected, and that's having effects on everything from malocclusion to perhaps the shape of our pharynx, indeed. So, yeah, there's all kinds of interesting things, all kinds of exciting, strange, and unexpected experiments that are going on today as we've changed our bodies and the way they function.
Sleep
is another good one, or reading, you know, and all the time we spend indoors, changing our eyes,
Well, you know what? You really enlightened me on that, because there's a phenomenon called parfocalization, and where the crystalline lens of the eye wants to always be within a certain number of diopters for or against a particular focal point. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a young child like I was, and you spent most of your time sitting 6 feet away from a television set or 6 inches away from a book, and then, you know, 8 feet away from a blackboard, you actually develop myopia over time, because the crystalline lens becomes parfocalized for these near distances. And you point out that this is a disease of modernity. It's not a defect per se in us. It's actually something we acquire, right?
Yeah, a few generations ago, almost nobody had myopia. In fact, the very first documentation of myopia was actually in the Queen's Guard. You know those people with the silly hats who guard the Queen in London?
Yeah.
Well, so the foot soldiers, James Ware was the first doctor who documented this, but he noticed that the foot soldiers in the Queen's Guard, none of them were myopic, but the officers who were educated, who read, that quite a few of them had myopia. And he published this, and it set off a firestorm of research around the world, actually in the 19th century, the early 19th century, and has now become very well, you know, documented phenomena that, you know, hunter-gatherers and people who are subsistence farmers and, you know, people who don't live modern Western lifestyles don't get myopia, but their grandchildren do. So it's not like some gene for myopia swept through the world,
right,
and suddenly caused people to become myopic. It's because we've changed our environments in ways for which our eyes are poorly adapted.
And so if you have a young child, make sure that they have opportunities to stare off into the distance, where, you know, parallel rays of light have to be focused on the retina, because that will change the way their eye shapes as they grow.
Yeah, it's not just distance; it's also the complexity of what they look at. So there's evidence that shows that children, regardless of how much reading they do, if you control for that, children who spend more time outdoors are much less likely to have myopia than children who spend more time indoors, after you account for the effects of reading. So, because there are signals that come to the retina that actually affect the growth of the eyeball, depending on the complexity of the visual environment.
Amazing. And it's when you start to understand these things, you think to yourself, what have we done to ourselves? What have we done to ourselves, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, think about myopia, though, because it's an instructive example, right? Myopia is not such a bad thing, after all. I mean, there are advantages to reading, right, which our ancestors didn't do. And it just highlights the fact that everything has costs and benefits, right?
Right.
And so, you know, some aspects of our modern world, maybe the costs are outweighed by the benefits. In the mm-hmm. case of reading, that might be the case. Because, you know, you can't suddenly have people no longer read, right, or spend all their life outside and not go to school. But so that might be one where we're willing to tolerate that trade-off. But heart disease, type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. cancer, osteoporosis, I don't think the costs outweigh the benefits at all. And, in fact, you know, not exercising, not eating a healthy diet, not getting enough sleep, those are, in a way, no-brainers, but we're somehow stuck in this vicious sort of feedback loop, and we need to get out of it.
We have just a few minutes, and this may be unfair to ask you this in just a few minutes. If we have to go long, I'm happy to go long. Where do you stand on lactase persistence and dairy? This is where a lot of the paleo, ancestral diet, primal people, they want to punch each other in the nose. No, we shouldn't be drinking dairy. Yes, we should. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm very glad that my ancestors evolved the ability to digest milk sugar, because I enjoy milk products and I have no problem with it.
Yeah, me too.
Because, you know, natural selection has operated to enable me to do it, and I don't have to smell up the room after drinking that stuff. So I am, you know, I don't eat ridiculous amounts of dairy products, but, you know, but they're part of my diet, the protein. And furthermore, I love cheese, so there we are. You know, we didn't evolve to be healthy. We evolved to have lots of offspring, and sometimes we just have to, you know, do the things we really love.
I've said on this show numerous times that libido may be a greater indicator of where you are on the longevity curve than anything else. If you think about the fact that job one for any species is to reproduce, live long enough to reproduce, and if you still feel like you have the drive to reproduce, then chances are you're healthy, because we know that when species get go through famine and environmental situations that are not good to bring offspring into the world, their libido goes away. You have any opinions on that statement?
Well, it's partly libido, but also just fertility. So, for example, women who are overweight but go on a diet, their ovarian function declines, right?
Mm-hmm.
They actually become infertile. Now, their libido might not change, but the body is able to sense that there's a shift in energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's less energy available because they're actually in what's called negative energy balance. They're dieting. And so the body's evolved to say, oh, wait, there are tough times going on now. Now is not the time to invest in reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily just libido. It's also just fertility. And of course, males and females are different in terms of how we allocate energy for reproduction. But you're right. But natural selection, it's the only currency it cares about is how many offspring you have to survive
mm-hmm.
and reproduce.
Right.
So our bodies are very good at shuttling energy towards reproduction when possible, which is one of the reasons that underlies prostate cancer and breast cancer increases over the last years, because those are caused by hormones that have trade-offs. Testosterone is a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it's beneficial for all kinds of things, including your libido. On the other hand, testosterone also increases your risk of heart disease. We didn't evolve to be healthy. We evolved to have offspring, and that's one of those trade-offs that's an inevitable consequence of the way we evolved.
You know what the single best thing you can do to protect yourself from ever developing prostate cancer?
Tell me.
Orgasm. We've done this show. No, I've got a fantastic study, a very well-controlled study. The men who had an average of 10 orgasms a month over a course of years, and they looked at different frequencies of orgasm, and the more orgasms, the lower the rate of prostate cancer in these men. And that speaks to the fact that if you're using it, because you talk about use it or lose it, well, the prostate is no different.
It's no different, yeah. Well, I'd love to see that study.
I'll email it to you.
You got my email.
Yes.
Send me the study. I'd love to see it.
Listen, thank you for coming on the show. It's truly, truly a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you for writing this book. And I'm telling everybody out there, you must buy this book. I promise you that you will email me and say thank you. I am the smartest person on my block now that I've read The Story of the Human Diet. I'm sorry, Human Body, by Dr. Daniel Lieberman. Thank you so much, Dr. Lieberman.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. All right, so there you have it. We also want to thank Danny McCamley for being on from the UK to talk about the anti-snoring ring. You can go to goodnightsnoring.com to learn more about that. I am going to. And we'll see you tomorrow with another episode of Superhuman Radio. Don't forget, get the book, The Story of the Human Body, right on the Superhuman Radio homepage. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.